Well, good day and welcome to this episode of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and we are diving in with a great episode here, bringing back a longtime guest on the show to talk about an important topic for all of us. We'll get into that in just a second. We still have to, though, touch base with Sam Bradley, my esteemed co-host extraordinaire. How are you doing, Sam?
Well, finally digging out. We actually had sun today in Colorado, and we're kind of hoping this cold weather will be over with, because it doesn't seem to have no one was left untouched, let's put it that way. But we have our friend Dan McGuire with us, and Dan always has interesting things to say. But Dan, you were kind of digitally impaired there for a while. What happened?
I think the easiest way to put it, sort of life got in the way, and concussion, all kinds of good things. So it's nice to be back on and enjoying all the weather discussion. We here in Rochester, we've been hammered pretty well. Of course, we are the lake effect snow center of the world, as far as I'm concerned. And so snow blowing and trying to not fall and smack my head like I did a couple weeks ago.
Oh, good grief, Dan. So you're in New York, right?
Yes, Rochester, New York. We're right up by the shore of Lake Ontario and just west of Lake Erie. So we get lots of lake effect from both of those two lakes, because of course they never freeze over, and so a little pack ice perhaps, but we are famous for our lake effect snow. You can literally not see across the street for about a half an hour, and then the sun comes out like it's the middle of June, and you just get used to it.
Well, it was interesting. I was watching a weather show the other day, as I tend to do, and it was about Lake Erie, and it was about when the just humongous pieces of ice started shoving. I guess they call it an ice shove. Becky, you're here with us. Can you tell us just for a second what that's all about? That was pretty fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, what I think you're referring to is essentially when, you know, in the dead of winter, when ice starts to form on the Great Lakes, and then if you get a prevailing wind direction, it's going to then shove all of that ice onto the shore downwind of that lake. And so you can get pretty significant ice pileups that can cause some damage if there's, you know, structures on the shore, but it really does look kind of cool, but can definitely be damaging. I think that's what you're referring to.
Oh, these chunks are just huge. And these two guys were out there trying to video it and almost got stomped by it. But we must not forget Dr. Joe. I know he's still digging out the snow he never thought he'd see in Memphis, right, Joe?
Oh, yeah. It's been many, many years since we've had this much snow here.
Oh, and of course, all the power outages. So hopefully things will start turning around here. So, Dan, we're going to talk about what we usually talk about with you, and that's critical incident stress. And you had sent me an email that had some good points that I want to refer to. One of them being that you have a ton of worries about the long-term social, mental, and behavioral impacts that COVID and everything else that's going on will have on society, more importantly, the first responders and hospital staff. And we've kind of alluded to that a bit. It's crazy. I mean, what do you see as what's going to happen with them and then, you know, the rest of this year and into next year? And it's not something you could just get over, right?
No. And Sam, I'm glad you said that. This is not something you just get over. And that's one of my pet peeves since I've been involved in this for the last, I have to now say out loud, almost 30 years. Back in the early days of fire, EMS, law enforcement, even in the hospitals, anywhere where there's emergent services provided, the early CISM was, well, just get over it. If you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen, all those standard sayings and colloquialisms and so forth. And just reading a number of stories from various resources, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, JAMA, EMS Today, just a whole wide variety. And then just listening to the responders locally here, they're just scared. They're doing their job. They're responding to calls. Call numbers are going up and going down and going back up again. And that's trying to like a ride an unbroken pony. And the long-term concern that I have is, what is this whole dilemma that we've been in for almost a year now, if not a year, if I'm remembering my calendar correctly, just what has this done to all of our outlook on life, our ability to handle even day-to-day stressors, and let alone just the critical incident stress that we have as emergency responders of all types. And I want to make sure that I include the 911 centers as well.
Yes.
I'm really on a beaten path on making sure that when we say emergency responders, that includes our 911 center agencies and centers, because they truly are the first responder, as I've said many times before. And they're the first ones to hear the cry for help and the begging for help. And my husband is turning blue and I don't know what to do. And of course, they do their job very well and get the right resources to respond. But there's also a fear that I just read in a big op-ed in today's New York Times that people are now becoming afraid of going to the hospital because it is the center of all COVID disease and infections and viruses and spread. So many people are also holding back from calling 911 and or even going to their doctor's office to even get help. And it's really changing our ability to handle and to process and prioritize the ability to deal with day-to-day challenges. And I think this COVID thing, if and when it's ever over, and yes, when we get all the vaccines out and everybody has their second vaccine, I'm still waiting for my first one. There's a large group of people that are very hesitant to even think about getting the vaccine because they think they're going to get COVID, and which is so far from the truth. Dr. Joe, I'm sure you can jump right on that yourself. It is just this overwhelming, like, mushroom cloud that is hitting not only our emergency responders, but our society as a whole. And our government, depending on what side of the aisle you might sit, is trying to do what they can with all kinds of funds and supporting programs and getting equipment out there. But I just wonder if this is something we're going to ever fully recover from mentally and emotionally and physically.
Good point. Joe, you have to have some thoughts on that.
Well, I think the last point's the most powerful point. You know, society is going to be different going forward, hopefully not terribly different from where we were a year and a half ago, but certainly new and different issues, and it's going to take people quite a while to adjust to that. On top of all that, we've got over 500,000 deaths from COVID, and we're not near the end of that that storm yet. So things are going to change even more in the future.
Well, I had a friend that I've known for probably 30 years. He's a nurse practitioner working for the government in Arizona. And I hadn't talked to him in a long time, and he called the other day and was telling me about his COVID experience. And, you know, he was pulled out of his clinic and put in the ER and just all the different things that went on and, you know, how he watched all. And for him, you know, in the Native American clinic that he works in, he knows these people and he knows all of their families. And when you, you know, his big issue was seeing and knowing that they or members of their family had died, which, you know, hits a lot closer to home than just transporting a patient to the hospital. So I really could sense in him, you know, the level of frustration that he was feeling. I wish there was something I could have said or done, but I know, you know, this is going to take time. And I think our coping mechanisms are all pretty much shot. Would you agree with that, Dan?
Yeah, and it not only shot, but I think they're just exhausted because we are so limited where we can go. And, you know, we're a country that's used to our freedoms and our ability to do what we want when we want. And when you take that away from us, that changes us from the neck up very quickly. And the other thing that I've been thinking in the background is, so many families are being forced to deal with these deaths, and they're so unprepared for this. And that sort of leads into my line of duty death specialty area, where we teach death notification and how to help the family through that whole death event. And I'm constantly seeing these stories where, you know, the tractor trailers are out in the hospital parking lots full of the deceased, and families can't even get to them, and funeral homes are beyond capacity. And I think that that's going to have another wave of impact once we get through this further, that it's really making us forced to the point of being fearful of the whole death and dying process because it's happening so fast. And then there's the isolation. And there's, especially the elderly folks who are in the supportive nursing facilities and so forth, that can't even see their families, or they can only see them through a glass. And I've seen many interviews with families of these residents that are just angry, that they are bitter that this is killing their loved ones because I can't even touch them. I can't even talk to them except through a pane of glass. And it's to me, that is just piling on one top of the other, that is just increasing this overall stress load that is just going to take us to a complete standstill at some point, is the way that I see it.
Yeah,
it's sad.
Brutal.
It is really sad. Brutal.
Jamie, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think that this is one of those things that's going to define, you know, a generation of people, and all the people that lived through it. You know, in much the same way that we remember the time around 9/11 and the time immediately after, and even that year afterwards, where, you know, the country reacted and so many things in our lives changed, the way we went through airports changed, and, you know, so many things got happened differently. This is a truly a life-changing event for everyone in one way, shape, or form. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of, you know, 20 years from now, there's going to be a lot of grizzled old paramedics out there who are going to tell the new guy, well, you don't know what tough is. I remember the COVID days. I mean, you know, there's going to be that kind of talk. And I hope that it's done in a manner that they talk about how they cope with it, that that's part of the discussion, not just that, you know, sharing of war stories, but it's also the sharing of how they overcame the pressures and the stressors involved with getting through this part of our lives.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, Jamie, because I was around when AIDS first reared its ugly head, and I see a lot of similarities in the fear and the not, you know, in the beginning, not quite knowing how you get it or how you don't get it. I mean, you know, I was around for that, and so this is not that dissimilar. Becky, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's sad, you know. I'm at a point where I'm, you know, I'm stir crazy, and I'm just kind of sort of really struggling with a lot. And you know, I'm incredibly privileged. I can work from home. I don't have to go anywhere, and I haven't, you know, I'm not gonna say it. I see everyone around me struggling. I see our forecasters, you know, the meteorologists who have been faced with a record-breaking hurricane season and faced with a winter that's just been crazy. And they're dealing with that on top of the same thing that everyone's experiencing with the pandemic. And so it's just, you know, life was turned completely upside down. We're dealing with this life-altering, I mean, Jamie's exactly right, a life-altering event. And, you know, if you have kids, you have different stressors. If you have elderly family members or high risk family members, it's a stress. But then there's still an expectation that we do our job, that we maintain a high level of productivity. And the weather, unfortunately, that it is demanded because the weather isn't stopping. The weather's been worse, you know, and we still have to do our job and protect lives and property and make sure people are aware. And there's so many. There's so many jobs like that, right? You know, for the first responders, the medical industry. And it just, I don't know. It just seems unending. And I don't know how we're, I don't know. Honestly, I'm at a bit of loss for words, and I'm so glad we're doing this episode with Dan, because I feel like collectively we're all at a bit of a breaking point. It's just hard.
Dan, you want to address that?
The number of factors that I agree wholeheartedly there, that we are reaching a breaking point, and I think maybe we have gone through a couple of breaking points and there's more to come, that we're, as I've said on other podcasts, you know, the moment that we're born, the moment that we come to life, we are hardwired from the brain to every part of our body to resist change, to resist anything that is not in the normal path of our being. And if anything has disrupted our normalcy, is this whole COVID and just the never-ending side effects and after effects that COVID is doing to us. It's changed the way we live. It's changed the way we shop. It's changed the way we celebrate. It has changed the way we grieve. It has changed the way that we just basically live day to day. And I'm a type of guy who likes to talk to people and to, you know, see my neighbors and help them out when they need something. But quite frankly, when I get those calls, I have to do a pause that I want to make sure that I'm doing this for all the right reasons, but am I protecting myself enough? And that makes me feel horrible that I'm having to put my safety before somebody else who, you know, I've got some neighbors that are, they're both 96 years old. And every time they call that they need something, I'm the first one to say, hey, I will be glad to come over. But there's also that thought on the way over, I want to make sure that I'm going to come out of here okay. And that just gives me a very creepy feeling of, not putting others first, which has been a big part of the reason why I even got into the emergency services, putting others first, and I'll come second, third, or fourth. But this COVID thing has changed that whole thought process completely differently. And I'm also seeing while I'm out in retail stores, people's tolerances to even the smallest inconveniences are blown out of proportion. And I can understand the reason why behind that, because we're all frustrated. We're all cooped up, or we're being like chained to our houses. But it's really a different society that is developing out of this whole COVID dilemma and this COVID pandemic, and I truly see a societal change ahead that we're going to need to be ready for, and that we're going to need to be ready for that classic statement, the new normal. And how do we define that new normal with something so colossally big and so beyond our control as is COVID?
Jamie, you have a question.
So Dan, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, what we see happening and what we fear will continue to happen. What can be done about it now? What are some strategies that we can take for ourselves, for the people we care about, for our coworkers and people we come in contact with?
Great question, Jamie. And I think that's the million-dollar question that we all need to look internally and get back to the core belief that, you know, we need to take care of each other. We need to look out for each other. We need to look at our 12s, our 6s, however you want to put it. I think what we need to do is begin to look at what are we grateful for. And that might be hard for somebody who is going through a COVID serious illness of a family member. But one of the I think most powerful neutralizing aspect of stressors and not feeling like you're in control is to begin to look at and to identify, what do I have and what am I grateful for and what is under my control, and release myself to the point that there are things that I can't control, even though that is embedded into us from the very beginning. And especially as emergency responders, we're expected to take control. We're expected to bring control to chaos and make things all better. And there's just times that that's not going to happen all the time. And we need to begin to start accepting that as part of the norm.
Patience and tolerance, I think, are two good words here. That
absolutely, Sam. Patience and tolerance, and that, and this goes so quickly back to the September 11th aftermath, that our country, our world, our whole thought of living and going forward was just completely warped, and it's taken us 10 years plus to get back to a sense of normalcy with that. And I think that's the same type of lessons that we've learned from recovering from September 11th, that we can use those same type of modes of thinking and actions as we continue to go through and fight through this COVID, and try to look for some of the positive things that are happening out there. It does look gloom and doom when you read any newspaper or any type of news item out there, but we also have to really make some effort to try to find what is working well, what is good, what am I thankful for, and what do I have in my reserves that I can perhaps share that with somebody else who is struggling more so than I am. And I know from my own personal experience, I get great joy and great renewal when I can help somebody through how little or how big that crisis they're going through, to help them to see a clearer picture that isn't just completely all black. There is some light there. There is some, the sun is going to come up the next morning, and re-changing that way we think of gloom and doom all the time, and start thinking a little bit more about, okay, what is working well for me, and let me celebrate that.
Oh, really good point. You know, something Becky said is sticking with me, and you've kind of alluded to it as well. So, you know, we go through our lives, we have ups, we have downs, and then we have this thing called COVID, which basically was a head slap to everybody in the world, some more than others. And then we have weather issues like the one we've been facing, you know, power outages secondary to that. You know, just it's one thing on top of another, on top of another. It's like we can't dig out because there's another layer on top of us. And I think about Dr. Joe. He just had to take off because he's got a leak in his roof and, you know, broken pipes and stuff he wasn't perceiving he would have to deal with. So, you know, how do you dig out when it just keeps doubling down on top of you?
Well, that's the challenge to all of us, is we all have a certain barometer within us that allows us to acknowledge that, yeah, it's one more thing on top of another, on top of another. And I don't want to sound Pollyanna or Mary Poppins in any way, because that's not the reality. But it takes true effort. It takes a lot of grit, if you will, for us to be able to take an assessment of, okay, what do I have and what is working well, and also acknowledge what isn't working well, because as you just said, Sam, sometimes those things can come at you like fastballs, and you just can't keep up with that. And that becomes such an overwhelming demeanor for us. And we can just beat us down to where our thoughts are always in a negative and dark way. And that's where it takes some really true internal strength, some real internal ability to look without the blinders on, look a little bit wider, and be able to see what's in the good column and what's in the bad column, and how can I work on these one at a time. You simply cannot erase all this all at once. You've got to do it one by one by one, and that's about as simple as I can make it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, I got one more question for you as we wind down here, but you made an interesting comment about line of duty deaths in law enforcement is up more than 160%. What is going on there?
Well, that is a big share of that is with COVID. I've been watching those numbers very closely. When this first hit, I really didn't think law enforcement was going to get that affected by COVID. But again, COVID is so insidious and so creepy, and sneaks into the smallest crevices of our lives that I get unfortunately, a daily report of law enforcement officers that have died in the line of duty, and the majority of them now are COVID deaths, and they're trying to determine, you know, was this truly a line of duty death COVID based, because did that officer pick it up from another officer who was asymptomatic but positive with the COVID? And did that person have comorbidities that the other one didn't have? And it is just really hitting law enforcement real hard. And I think it's a time of reckoning that we have to make sure that we have got all of our plans in place. And I am going to sound like a broken record, and I apologize, but how many of these agencies have any, even the most basic of line of duty death pre-plan in place? And when you're having two and three officers potentially dying in some of these larger agencies, and then there's all the restrictions that, you know, you can't have the big memorial services and the send-offs and all the pageantry because we're limited only to 10 people at the funeral home in some states. And that creates a lack of empathy and sympathy internally for many of these families that is going to be with them for a very long time.
Absolutely. I remember going to many funerals, but we didn't have the COVID issue on top of all of that. That certainly changes things. So, Becky, any final thoughts from you?
Yeah, I had my regular check-in with my therapist on Monday. I see her every, 3 months now, just as a sanity check, I guess you could say. And I mentioned that, like, sort of my overwhelming feeling right now is numbness. And she's like, yeah, that's what she's hearing from a lot of people. We're numb right now. And it's a pretty natural defense mechanism because there's just so much happening. And it's hard to even know where to respond in reacting to it. So it's a lot easier to just be numb and go about your day and, you know, do the daily motions of getting up and going to work and, you know, feeding your pets and making dinner. And it's tedious, but it's also safe, you know, for the most part for some of us. And there's others that aren't in the safe situation or having to put their lives on the line. And it's, I don't know. Things are tough right now. And I hope that if people have the opportunity that they can see a therapist, even if it's telehealth, which mine is, it's a video check-in. There are definitely resources out there, and I hope that people are able to take advantage of them. I hope people are able to talk to those around them because we're all experiencing this on some level. And I think sharing, you know, what we're going through helps make it tangible that it's whatever you're feeling, whatever that is, it's okay to feel that. It's normal for whatever.
You're not the only one.
Right.
Yeah, you're not the only one feeling it.
Yep.
So. Really good point, Becky. So, Jamie, I hate to end this episode on a downer, but, you know, it is what it is, and we have to do the best we can with it. What are your final thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, this has been a great discussion, and, you know, I'm always thankful to have Dan on the show and bring these topics to the forefront. I think that only by shining light on them do we make them routine enough that people are going to pay attention and think about how they can deal with stress from whatever things. And of course, COVID's adding that extra layer of stress on top of everybody right now. So we need to continue to shine a light on it and bring it to the front and make it okay to talk about. And I think that's something that, you know, we've done a good job with here on the show, and I hope we continue to do that. And, you know, maybe when we have Dan back on, you know, and next time, it usually seems like we have you on about every year or so, Dan, but the next time we have you back, it'll be to talk about some real solutions that people are doing as we are out of the COVID issue, and that there's some that we've seen a positive change in how we deal with things like this. It's one of the reasons we're really thankful to have Paragon Medical Education Group help us out. Joe had to leave early from the call, but you know he and the rest of the team there understand this, and they always build in an understanding of stress management into their training programs so that responders who are dealing, who are going to be dealing with real experiences, are also sharing how they cope with those experiences in the training process. And I think that that's important too. So reach out to them if you can. Check in and see what you can do for their customizable, amazing training resources they bring to the table. You can do that by heading over to ParagonMedicalGroup.com. You can also head over and find them under Paragon Medical Group on Facebook, Paragon Med EDU on Twitter. Reach out to them. Thank them for sponsoring the show and thank them for making their resources available and find out how you can bring that kind of thing to your jurisdiction. They're engaged in training right now in the midst of COVID. They've got systems that can work within your system too. So that's it for me. Dan, where can folks find you if they want to kind of continue this discussion beyond this podcast?
Well, it's simply the word CISM Perspectives, plural. You can put that in any search engine. It's on LinkedIn. It's on Facebook. It's on our website. And have program will travel, and we'll be always glad to speak to anybody at any time to see if I can give them some more insight and expand that. What am I grateful for? And take away a little bit of the focus of it's all wrong. And I know we're quick on time here. I think it ought to be a goal of this podcast that we make an extraordinary effort that talking about what bothers you is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of inner strength. And that has got to be a fighting model for us to get through this COVID pandemic.
Well said, Dan.
Definitely. Becky, where can folks find you?
Over on Twitter at WX_Bex. I touch on this topic not infrequently and thoroughly second Dan's suggestion to talk about it. And it's not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength. And on the Disaster Podcast Facebook group.
Sam, how about you?
Same places under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11. We're hovering somewhere around 900 people in our Facebook group, and I'm grateful for that. How about you, Jamie?
Well, you can find me under the handle PodMedic in most social media locations, so please look me up, friend, or follow me on those places. And, of course, in our Disaster Podcast Facebook group and over at disasterpodcast.com, where if you check each episode page for whatever you're listening to, you can find links to everything we've talked about and also links to subscribe to the show on your favorite mobile devices or even by email. So that way you won't miss any future episodes at all. Sam, good episode. I always am thankful for having Dan on. And just another, it's a topic we can't touch on too much, I feel like.
Well, I'm sure we'll be talking to Dan quite a bit this year, as Becky said, as things wind down and start to change again. And we can just cross our fingers that there's no more major crises like this. But in the meantime, stay strong. Take care of each other, take care of yourselves, and foster that inner strength.